What is happening? Welcome to the Post Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 13th. Happy birthday to my father. And yes, we're going to talk about baseball. I'm sorry, I'm very late today. I think you can understand that, you know, it's just one of those days that I wasn't able to get to everything as quickly as I could. But here I am for you to talk about all this stuff. Okay. Kevin Gausman, 3.2 innings, 600 runs, 10 hits, 0 walks, 4 Ks. Obviously not what we wanted at all. 18 whiffs, 37% CSW. And are we worried? A little bit. Splitters went 11 for 31 whiffs, but the four-seamer, well, I don't know. It's kind of weird because the four-seamer got hit a lot in play. This year, its foul ball rate has gone way down. It would be like a 23-25% foul ball rate like every single year. And right now it's at 13% and even lower in this game. And what does that mean? Well, it means that those foul balls are being translated into either balls in play or to whiffs. And the thing is, we don't really want Kevin Gausman to be a big whiff guy. He actually is at a 14% swinging strike rate on his four-seamer this year, which was well under 10% the previous 2 years. You know, the 2 years where he was amazing. And it also means, though, higher ball in play percentage, and you don't want that. You want Kevin Gausman to get called strikes on his four-seamer and then get his swings and misses on his splitter. He wants the balls in play on his splitter. Why? Because that's just better outcomes for him. And one of the reasons that we saw that 360 plus BABIP back in 2022 was because Kevin Gausman was allowing too many of those balls in play on his four-seamer. So that's what I'm noticing as something that's kind of strange in this. I could also mention that he had a weird velocity drop his last game, and we're kind of worried about that by the end of the game. And then this one, last four pitches were, keep in mind, Gausman's four-seamer when he's cooking and doing everything right is 94 sometimes. It was 91.5, 91.7, 94.2, and then 89.6. Oh, no. We don't want that. That is not the velocity that we want. 89.6 on his four-seamer is very, very wrong. So I hope he's okay. I hope it's not really something that we should be worried about moving forward. It was just the very end of it. It was the fourth inning. He had been overworked, et cetera, et cetera. I should also mention, of course, 21 sliders thrown by Gausman. That is so not right. He's normally a two-pitch guy with a rare slider, and he threw so many of them. They got hit around. I don't know. My heart says that he's going to be okay. My brain says that this is all just weird. And that, my heart, that is my emotions, like, okay, something's clearly up with Gausman, while my brain says, well, this was weird. He had 18 whiffs still and 37% CSW. So I guess we just kind of go with this. If someone is selling it and you're able to sell like Brady Singer or something, you obviously won't. But you know what I mean? Someone else that we don't really love that much, but is just having a hot stretch. Yeah, I would take a chance all day on this, but you're not going to get that. So I don't know. I don't want to take the risk of buying Gausman right now. I also would just hold if I had him, right? It's too much of a shrug that you don't want to lose a trade. It feels so much worse to lose a trade than it is to win a trade. Just don't do that, okay? Just don't do that. Bryce Miller did well against the Cubs. He looks like the same guy from last year. I'm a little disappointed about that, but that's just how that is. Paul Blackburn did well against the Nationals. It is a Vargas rule. He's going to get the Cardinals next, and I'm not really in on that. Reed Detmers got the win against the Red Sox. He had a good line. His fastball, actually really everything, wasn't really commanded well. The other starts much better, I think, at times. Well, the first one, the four-seamer was all over the place a little bit, but it was a lot all over the place out of the zone. This was a lot of stuff that was in the zone, all 33% CSWs on everything. And like all of his pitches, really 33% plus, but it just, I don't know, it wasn't like the perfection of Detmers, and a lot more hittable pitches that went his way, I think, in this one. At least he still has a 17 inches of vert on his fastball, which is what you want. You don't, like 15 inches of vert, that is a vertical break, is like average, below average, and that's what he had before, and now he has 17, 18, and so 17, that's cool. So we're still in on Detmers, but yeah, it's not, I want to see that start where I just go, oh my gosh, you're doing all of the stuff at once. Like, I haven't seen that quite yet. Derek Skubal is a little bit of, you know, scary. Not just because, I mean, okay, I shouldn't say it's scary, because his average fastball was what it was last year, 95.8. The thing is, that was like 97, 90, hitting 98 in his earlier starts. Then he had that weird inning where it dropped in his previous outing. And then the four-seamer in this one, well, went 3 for 32 whiffs. But fortunately, the changeup is amazing. And the slider, well, that's still not much of anything. But 3 for 32 four-seamer whiffs as he threw it in the zone is like, wait, hold on a second. That's not the four-seamer we were promised. So this is the game that we were hoping to quell all of our fears about Scooble's last two innings in his previous outing. We didn't quite get that, but obviously still good. 5 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. Sorry I'm not mentioning the lines as much today because it's very late and, you know, okay. Andrew Abbott against the White Sox did well, got the win. You know, he went 7 innings and all, but just there's nothing that's exciting here. He has a good extension on his pitches. He has a 7-foot extension, which is definitely above average. It's like 85th percentile. However, everything else is average on that four-seamer as far as shape goes. It's at 92.5, and the other things in his arsenal are just mediocre, and he's not really locating exceptionally well. So blame it on the White Sox. Max Fried, ace is going to ace. Finally, he's fine and good and whatever. We're cool with this. Really good precision on his four-seamer. I'm just so happy that he had a good start. 6.1 innings of 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, 4 Ks. Yes, I know we want more than 4 Ks when his changeup becomes the changeup that it has been. Then it's there, but the command and everything is good. So we're cool here with Max Fried. And Freddy Peralta is ace is going to ace galore. 18 whiffs, 38% CSW for a, not a Gallows pole, but actually a golden goal. Co-share of the Gallows pole, of course, with the King Cole there. Slider had 9 over 25 whiffs. That is just beautiful. And Freddy Peralta is looking so, so wonderful after I, of course, was down on him in the preseason. And I apologize for that. I didn't expect his fastball velocity to not only be what it is now, but also increase across the board when it comes to its pitch shape and to have the slider wake up and be completely healthy. So I'm just happy to see it. And as long as he's pitching, Freddy Peralta is just dominating. We have other guys to talk about, of course, and tomorrow's streamers to rank. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. Christopher Sanchez went 6 innings, 1 earned run, 7 base runners, 6 Ks. It was against the Pirates, and now he gets Rocky Road, and that's cool. His changeup actually wasn't very good in this one. I mean, performed fine, but the command of it I've seen way better from Christopher Sanchez, and it wasn't that here, but it worked. I mean, it was one of those where I watched it and saw the line after. I was like, oh yeah, I guess he did that, but man, he's not really pitching well. So I'm glad this worked out, and he gets Rocky Road, so that should be much better for him. Jake Irvin did well against Athletics, but this is a blame on the Athletics, and you should not be trusting Jake Irvin. Luis Severino did a cool thing. He got the win against the Royals. Props to him for that. 5 innings, 1 earned run, just 1 hit, 4 walks, and 4 Ks. That's been a Royals team that's been really hot lately, but the cool thing here is not the four-seamer, because he didn't actually really locate that well, which isn't a shock, because he didn't get many whiffs because of it. It's not the slider. I mean, it was kind of whatever in the changeup, no. No, he threw 25% cutters. And I don't know if you remember way back when in 2022, when he came back from Tommy John, he was throwing this cutter. He actually had like 3 different velocity bands of cutters and sliders, where there was a hard slider, there was a loopier slider, and then there was this really, really tight cutter. And I loved that cutter. He threw it really well against the Jays one game in 2022. And I was like, okay, this is a great thing. Maybe he doesn't need all 3 velocity bands, but at least if he has that tight cutter, that would be amazing. And then he dropped it. And I was really sad. But here it is again. This was 93, while the four-seamer was 96. 45% CSW, down and away locations, 68% strike rate. And did it get whiffs? No. But it got a ton of strikes that he needed. 4 walks here. He needed this pitch. This is great. He just needs a whiff pitch now that I can really lean into, because 4 walks he can't do in 5 innings. And I'm always going to get 1 hit here, buddy. And 4 strikeouts, yeah, right, because your four-seamer was not well located, and you aren't able to get whiffs because whiffs are correlated more with location and stuff, which is kind of cool. But yeah, we are feeling okay about Severino if that cutter does show up. Please do that. By the way, when I say it's correlated to locations, when there's a certain level of stuff, right, you can't have no stuff and get whiffs, like that's just not going to happen. But if you have the most precise pitches with good stuff, and then that's more than adding more to stuff and not having location. Okay. Stuff does more for avoiding good contact and play for the batter. Bailey Falter, hi. What's up? You got a win against the Phillies. That's awesome. You did not pitch nearly as well as you potentially could, And I still trust that he's going to get dealt to the Rays at some point. Yeah, Bailey Falter to me is not someone you chase. Steven Matz got singled out, 8 hits and 4.2 innings, but just one run. So, hey, that's all right. 2 whiffs and 18% CSW. Oh, boy. Do not go after Matz. Jacob Wagaspak. Yeah, who is that? Well, he stepped in for Tyler Alexander as he had to step away for personal reasons. He went against the Giants in 4 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Normally, I would just say, whatever, who cares? But here's the thing. Wagaspak has 18 to 19 inches of IVB on his four-seamer, which is truly elite, with 7 feet of extension. So what did he do? Just a 40% CSW with high location intent across 35 four-seamers. And he pairs it with a cutter that he also kind of keeps high and then also comes down into the zone. That totally works. So if you see Jacob Wagaspak getting opportunities this year, and he is the SP number 6 right now, then again, that's only because Shane Baz is out and so is Taj Bradley. Well, if Jacob Wagaspak has regular starts, which he doesn't, Tyler Alexander is going to get this back, then maybe you should pay attention to Wagaspak, who threw 71 pitches. I'm not going to say his name again. Okay. Keaton Wynn against the Rays on the other side of this. He did fine, but I don't think that there's enough in the tank here. It's a splitter that can be all right. He, like, can be good and was here, but then there's just not much else. And even though he throws like 95, it's not very good. Trevor Rogers against Atlanta survived 2 earned runs in 5 innings, as I think Atlanta has not dominated as much as we've seen in the past. They will. Trevor Rogers, I normally think of having his main thing being a slider. And then hopefully the fastball is good enough. But this was actually the changeup being really good, which is nice. Because hopefully then the slider can catch up. But then I can't help myself but think new skill versus old skill. That is, whenever a new skill shows up that does well, I always hope, okay, cool, hold that new skill and get your old skill back. But what usually happens is that the new skill disappears before the old skill returns. I hope it's not going to be that case in this one. And something to really note for Rogers, because I do think that he's going to stick around when Cabrera and Braxton Garrett come back, and that's going to be Puck and Weathers getting displaced. But we'll see how that goes. Keep an eye on Trevor Rogers. Ryan Feltner, if he were on a different team than the Rockies, we might be interested in him. And he did well, got a win against the Jays here, but it was 5 innings, 2 runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Like, not really that much, just the win for the most part in a 3.6 ERA. He's getting more whiffs with the slider, which is nice because he has a relatively flat 4-seamer, which is good, but yeah, we're not going to go after this because of the Rockies. Yoshinobu Yamamoto had an okay start, no win, 5 innings, 300 runs, but 5 base runners and 6 Ks. Like, okay. Thing is, I just want him to be better. He can be. It's so easy. He has a 1.7 height-adjusted VAA, right? So HAVA, whatever you want to say. Attack angle is what I want to do. That is elite, like truly elite, okay? What makes PLV love JP Sears so much is because his fastball has the same attack angle, but JP Sears actually throws that four-seamer upstairs. This is a better flat angle than Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. This is amazing. And he doesn't go upstairs. And he's making himself not earn whiffs. He's allowing hitters to hit his fastball easier because of this. And it drives me up the wall. The Dodgers as a whole, which is nuts, I understand, don't really love high four-seamers. They think that there's lower slugging percentages downstairs, so they go there with their four seamers, and I just can't get behind that. It's a sub 10% swing strike rate here, only a 22% whiff per swing, and generally when we see a good whiff rate that is per swing, it's like 35% to 40%. He has that potential on this heater to do that, and he's just not. So fine, he's leaning on called strikes here. Yamamoto, man, I hope you can do that at some point. Dane Dunning against the Astros got the win. Props to him, 300 runs in 5 innings. Yeah, he gets the Tigers next time, so I'm okay streaming that one if you want. But yeah, Dane Dunning isn't a guy for a long term. Tanner Houck against the Angels, 5.2 innings of 4 earned runs. It's wild. He allowed 12 hits, 0 walks, and 2 Ks. He threw 98 pitches. So he also allowed 28 balls in play. 28 balls in play. Most guys don't see 28 batters in a game. 28 balls in play. Absolutely ridiculous. That is one more than a perfect game. Oh man. Absolutely bonkers. That is an average of 3.5 pitches per ball in play, not even like plate appearance. And why did that happen? Because he threw everything down the zone. Like down the middle of the zone. Sorry. get down the zone, whatever. Tanner Houck has to be better with that slider and sinker command, especially against right-handers. You got to get that thing inside and you got to get that thing away. You know the two I'm talking about there. Splitter and cutter did not get involved much, and he needed those, and they weren't there. So I think this is just one of those days where it really didn't work out for him. Like, he did not have his command, and the... Yeah, BABIP didn't go his way. 12 over 28 is, yeah, that's not favorable. I think that's something like a 400, something along those lines. But yeah, it's kind of deserved because you threw things down the middle. He shouldn't do that. BABIP shouldn't be as bad. We keep going with Tanner Houck. Michael King, I know also, like, he threw against bad opponents before. I get it. This is a tougher one. Not really even tougher one. It's a tougher one next time against Cleveland. We're still doing it. Michael King against the Dodgers, 5 innings, 4 earned runs. Yeah, he had a really good changeup. Hasn't found his breaker yet. He'll get there. Jordan Wicks against the Mariners, 4 innings, 4 earned runs, 5 hits, 4 walks, 6 Ks. Oh, I actually think Wicks is so close. I know this was against the Mariners, and I was saying that this might be the one. He had 16 whiffs. How did he do that? Because his changeup was amazing. 12 over 29 whiffs, while his four-seamer got 4 of them, but allowed foul balls at a 34% rate. I know I'm talking so much about foul balls today, but we see the two extremes. With Gausman, he didn't get any of them, while Wicks got all of them. And in both cases, they took away from the thing, or they made an extreme of those outcomes. For Gausman, it was more in play. For Wicks, it was fewer whiffs, right? Always takes away from something. And this one was whiffs for Wicks's four-seamer. He's also really leaning into the Blake Snell blueprint now, which I love. Four-seamers are upstairs. Changeups are down in arm side. And he tried to do sliders down in glove side, but he just went 1 for 9 strikes on that. I think this is something that he really does come into form with. This is what development is. He's trying something new, and it didn't quite go his way this time, but I do think this is going to be what Wicks does moving forward. And I love it. I think that there's some legit potential in this. It's a high IVB four-seamer. It's not the best angle and everything like that, but pairing it with the changeup, especially if you can get a cutter slider working as well, oh man, that's fun. You don't have to jump in now, right? Because, I mean, no one's really going after this. At the moment, he gets Arizona next, so you can kind of wait, but just really be aware of Jordan Wicks in this way. Tyler Wells, eventually we'll jump back in, I think. He gets, he got the Brewers here, took the loss. Freddy Peralta was on the other side. 400 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, 3 Ks in 4 innings. So fine, he gets a Twins X. That does seem like it's all right, except he gets Pablo Lopez. So we're not going to do that, and we just kind of wait. He's close to what he was before, but there's a little extra refinement on his pitches to have the same command as last year. Michael Wacha struggled against the Mets. He just didn't have good command. I don't believe that's going to happen again. He had 10 hits and 6 innings with 5 earned runs. Pablo Lopez, 4 innings, 5 earned runs, 6 hits, 3 walks, 7 Ks. Oh boy, and 4 innings against the Tigers? Yeah, this was just not it, and he's going to be better. Like, it was just one of those games again. Like, don't read into this with Pablo Lopez. Brandon Pfaadt wasn't very good. It was a 3-run shot in the first inning, and then he allowed a run in the second, and 2 more in the third. Final 3 were good. He lasted 6 innings at least to make that 6-earned run clunker not as bad. Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't buy Pfaadt. I've been out on Pfaadt, and I still am not. He needs more in his arsenal. He just has a good sweeper, and the 4-seamer isn't doing enough, and the changeup isn't doing enough. Chris Flexen against the Reds, he's not very good and didn't do well. And then you also have JP France, who did not do well at all against the Rangers. 4 whiffs and 23% CSW, 8 earned runs in 4 innings. And he's a guy that you stream against not the Rangers and not Atlanta, which is his next one, so you can leave him on the wire. Looking at tomorrow's games. All right, so we have leading off, a lot of auto starts here. Corbin Burnes, Zach Wheeler, Cole Reagans, Luis Castillo, Zach Gallen, Jose Barrios, Blake Snell, Bailey Ober, obvious ones here. And then Brian Bello gets the Angels, Nestor Cortez against the Guardians. You are going for all of that. Nathan Eovaldi arguably could be in the top one, but it's the Astros, and I feel like that's a tough one. Same with Christian Javier against the Rangers. Yu Darvish is underneath that against the Dodgers. Jack Flaherty is here against the Twins because, yeah, I think that's a decent amount of matchup, and I don't think he performed that poorly last time. It was just a lot of fastballs. Very hittable that were punished, and sometimes they don't get punished, and also Flaherty doesn't always have that bad fastball command. He still has a slider very much intact. Meanwhile, you have James Paxton against the Padres and Charlie Morton against the Marlins. Those are both good win chances. Questionable start is Jesus Luzardo against Atlanta, and I just feel it's such a high-risk, high-reward kind of start that I can very well see myself just playing that safe. Stream pick of the day is Graham Ashcraft against the White Sox. You can also do Javier Assad against the Mariners. I don't really like both of them. It's questionable start as Graham Ashcraft's command is very wonky. While Javier Saad doesn't quite have a high enough ceiling for me to chase, but those offenses aren't very strong, and they could come out ahead, especially for a win. You have Mitch Keller going against the Phillies, complete cherry bomb. Tyler Anderson, who has been on a good roll, but it is in Fenway, and he's not destined to dominate. Tyler Alexander is coming back. He gets the Giants. That could be fine. Let's just say that it could be fine. let's hope for the best there. You have Logan Allen against the Yankees. He's not pitching poorly, but it's the Yankees. Alex Wood against the Nationals. Maybe. If he locates well enough. Miles Michaelis against the Diamondbacks. There's always a chance with Miles Michaelis. Jose Budo rounding out the questionable start here against the Royals, as he has performed decently well, but it is the Royals who have been hot, and yeah, there's not enough of a ceiling here. And do not start Colin Ray, Trevor Williams, Michael Soroka, and Kyle Freeland, because duh. That is it for today. I am so sorry for the delay today, guys. It's going to be a little bit weird on weekends moving forward. It's just how it is, but I'm happy we can still enjoy this together. That is it. My name is Nick Pollock. May your bat be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.